This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support comes from Brian Lowe Financial. The whole world is enthralled with what's happening with coronavirus, and we will keep you posted not only on what's happening abroad in our country and in our community, but also in the markets, the Dow, the NASDAQ, and the S&P in the early going today, 30 minutes into trading, a little more than that, now down more than 10%, and we'll follow it with you. 877-217-5757 is your number, and we're joined by an exceptional person, a scientist from the University of Chicago, Neil Shubin. He's the author of Some Assembly Required, Your Inner Fish and the Universe Within, and he is back with a new work, and we will talk with him about Some Assembly Required, Decoding 4 Billion Years of Life from Ancient Fossils to DNA. And Dr. Shubin, of course, was scheduled before the world as we know it changed so dramatically, but his research certainly dovetails with the issue of the day. And what's your take, before we get to evolution, what's your take about coronavirus and its evolution?
Well, I mean, we have a, well, thank you, Jim, for having me on. I appreciate it. Yeah, I wrote the book before coronavirus, well, a couple years before coronavirus. But it turns out many of the stories, much of the science in there is actually relevant in many ways to this. I'm not a public health expert, nor am I a virologist, per se. But I am a molecular biologist. And one of the things that people should know is that we have been living in the last two decades in a revolution in science. You know, we've had the Human Genome Project. We've had the Rice Genome Project, the Corn Genome Project. We've had thousands upon thousands of genome projects. We can now sequence the DNA or RNA of creatures, the genetic material of creatures, you know, in an afternoon. You know, so it's these are remarkable times, and so we're beginning to unlock the secret to the genome. You know, so this is truly a revolution in technology and our understanding of life. And you know, what gives me a lot of hope is that we're now able to see the structure of viruses, such as coronavirus in particular, with great detail. And it's really these tools which we've used to unlock the genetic secrets of life that we can now marshal to our betterment, in particular our, you know, our battle with coronavirus. So, you know, we do, you know, if this hit, you know, 5 decades ago, we wouldn't have had much recourse. But now we have these tools at our disposal. And in the United States, Europe, and elsewhere, we have just an incredible scientific infrastructure. So, you know, what we need to do as a society is social distance, slow the spread, look out for the most vulnerable among us, and give science time to come to the rescue.
We have a scientific infrastructure, but our medical facilities are lacking when it comes to mass issues like this. And, that, of course, that is one of the huge concerns. So is it a case in which science can, in its own way, counteract what we don't have as far as just nuts and bolts and physical plants to take care of people?
Well, I think, you know, that's tethering that is the most important concern. I think, you know, when you look at the science of the spread of a virus like this, first of all, I should say with coronavirus, there are so many unknowns. We really don't know a lot about it. We know its genetic structure, but we're not really so sure about its residence times on certain surfaces. There are different reports out there. We don't know the details of its spread. We don't know the details of how, you know, asymptomatic people of different age groups can spread it and so forth. But the one thing that is very clear, that is, the more we social distance, the more we can stay functioning as a society by having these social distance measures up, the more time we can buy our healthcare system to take care of the most vulnerable among us, and the more time we can buy for our scientists to find treatments and cures.
We're visiting with Dr. Neil Shubin. His latest book is Some Assembly Required, Decoding 4 Billion Years of Life from Ancient Fossils to DNA. You write, Doctor, that we have a lot of surprises when it comes to DNA. And for example, only 2% of it, you say, is composed of our genes.
Yeah, that's right. Isn't that remarkable? I mean, you know, I wrote this before coronavirus, right? But, you know, just one amazing fact is, you know, you and I and your listeners, you know, we're 4 trillion cells. That's what our bodies are. And inside each of those cells is a 6-foot-long strand of DNA. Think about that. It's all packed up and rolled in on itself submicroscopically, but when you unpack it, it's 6 feet long, such that if you were to take all our DNA from each of our 4 trillion cells and, like, lie it end to end, it would go from here almost to Pluto. Now, the surprise is not only that, but that only 2% of it makes codes for the proteins that are our genes. The other 98% is full of other stuff. It's full of computational machinery that controls the activity of the genes. But, you know, and I wrote this before coronavirus, but we have 4 times more ancient viral genetic material inside our genome than we have our own genes. 8% of our genome are ancient virus material that invaded the genomes of our distant ancestors, only to be knocked out and repurposed. So you can look at our genome as a graveyard of ancient viruses that once infected, entered the genome, but then were knocked out, were neutered. Which is really remarkable because we have 4 times more of that, you know, those dead viruses in our genome than our own genes. You know, so viruses are actually part of our genetic makeup, believe it or not. And one of the amazing stories is that scientists say, that can be one example, working on genes that underlie or play a role in memory and that we use to remember things, lessons and so forth, that some of those genes, at least one big one, is a ancient virus that got repurposed. So we're finding our relationship with viruses is amazingly complicated, that the they've invaded our genome in the past, and they compose much of the genome. But also, sometimes those viruses have invaded our genome and then themselves were repurposed for however that happened to play a role in new structures. It's just mind-boggling. You know, and if you want something to think about, just think about how a little tiny sub-microscopic piece of genetic material that some people don't even know whether they're living or inert, right, a virus, can change the world. You know, it can change our genome. That's just a remarkable example of our relationship to the rest of living things or the rest of the planet in many ways. And so and we're beginning to unlock that with the technologies that we have, which are remarkable.
When we speak of coronavirus, we're largely talking about a respiratory condition based on what we know now. And you have done voluminous research on how our lungs came about. As we developed as a species, how did that happen?
Yeah, it's a pretty, you know, again, more surprises. The funny thing about this is, if you look at, let's just take one of the great moments in the history of our planet and life on our planet. And that was, you know, for a long time, all life was in the water and the oceans, fish swimming and other critters like that. Then at some point about 375, maybe about 380 million years ago, creatures took their first steps on land, and that was a huge revolution. And you think about, for our distant ancestors to do it, they needed limbs, they needed lungs, they needed all kinds of stuff to be able to do that. And if you look at that transition, you can say, well, that looks awfully impossible. How can you know? You've got to evolve all this stuff at once to be able to do this. Well, it turns out as we trace it, what we see is that lungs are not some new invention that creatures, you know, had evolved to walk on land. Lungs are actually the primitive condition in many fish. That is, most fish have some form of air sac that lies next to the gut tube. In a lot of fish, it's the lungs, so we find fish with true lungs. In some fish, it's a swim bladder that helps them control neutral buoyancy. And the genes that build both of those are the same, mostly. What's interesting about that, then, is it really shows vividly that lungs were not some new invention that creatures evolved to walk on land. Lungs already existed in fish as they were living in water. You know, the fish that have lungs have both lungs and gills, and they use both. When their oxygen content in the water is high, they use the gills. When it's low, they go to the surface and breathe with lungs. Turns out that strategy was on the planet for millions of years before animals took their first steps on land. You know, it's a really remarkable one. It's true with limbs as well. You know,
when you say billions, billions of years.
Isn't that amazing when you think about
billions?
Just the majesty of millions and billions of years.
Well, and we're short on time, but we do have some listeners who have asked questions, and one is about the anti-science sentiment in some quarters, in this country in particular, in which some people say that the Earth and is only a few thousand years old. Now, you're saying it's several billion years old, or at least evolution is. How do you combat people who have that kind of a viewpoint?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a scientist, and I got to follow the evidence wherever it leads me, you know. And so my job as a scientist and a science communicator is really to sort of dispassionately lay out the evidence that we have and to follow it to its conclusions, to show readers this is what we know, this is what we don't know, these are things we have yet to figure out. And this is where the evidence takes us. And that's kind of where I have all the fun as a scientific author, to show how we know these facts. And so the more I follow, the more you lead, the more you see that the evidence from geology, from DNA, from fossils, and you name it, comparative anatomy, all points to this deep history of life on our planet. And that's where the evidence leads, and I lay that evidence out in my writing.
Lastly, we only have about 30 seconds, but a listener asks about how the coronavirus will be combated, perhaps in a better way, as you hope, than the Spanish flu was a century ago.
Well, fingers crossed. And number one, we have public health measures. We're social distancing as a country, as a planet. We're doing that very aggressively. The other is, you know, we now understand the structure of coronavirus. And so we'll be seeing it, you know, we'll be able to develop therapies and hopefully vaccines, you know, within months to years.
The book is Some Assembly Required from Dr. Neil Shubin, one of the best scientists in our country and in the world, elected to the National Academy of Sciences. We'll be back with more Talk Louisiana after this brief pause.